This is Healthcare Strategies.
This podcast was recorded remotely due to the coronavirus pandemic. As a result, the quality may be a little lower than our usual standards. We appreciate your patience as we practice social distancing. From all of us at Xtelligent Healthcare Media, stay healthy, stay safe, and enjoy the latest episode of Healthcare Strategies. This episode is sponsored by Change Healthcare. Change Healthcare offers end-to-end revenue cycle management solutions for health systems, hospitals, and their employed physicians wanting to simplify workflows, reduce denials, optimize revenue, and improve the patient experience.
Hello, and welcome to Healthcare Strategies. I'm Jacqueline Lapointe, Senior Editor of Xtelligent Healthcare Media's website, RevCycle Intelligence. Today, we are talking to Ken Wheat, Senior Vice President and CFO of Eisenhower Health. Like most hospitals across the country during the COVID-19 pandemic, Eisenhower Health in California had to quickly pivot its operations to ensure the safety of its patients and providers. That meant shutting down revenue-driving service lines and refocusing clinical efforts on COVID-19 and, in some cases, virtual care. But these efforts came at a steep price. Hospitals lost nearly $60 billion a month during the pandemic, according to estimates from American Hospital Association. As communities start to open back up, providers are looking at how to resume in-person care, re-engage patients, and recover revenue safely and effectively. In today's episode, we are going to talk about how Eisenhower Health is navigating this next phase of COVID-19 while maintaining financial stability. Thank you for joining us, Ken.
Thanks, Jackie. I'm very happy to be here.
So let's start with, how is Eisenhower Health handling the financial implications of COVID-19?
Well, obviously, we're having the same challenges as the rest of the country. Let me give you a little bit of background for context in terms of how we're doing that and we're handling it, the rest of the organization. Eisenhower Health, we're a 463-bed acute care facility. We have about 3,500 staff members, $800 million in annual revenue, about 20,000 discharges a year, 85,000 ED visits, nearly a million outpatient visits across over 100 outpatient clinics throughout our market, which is the Palm Springs, Coachella Valley area. We also have an affiliated physician foundation medical group with over 250 physicians, and we're a teaching facility with over 100 residents.
We are also home to the Hazleton Betty Ford Center and the Annenberg Center for Health Sciences. To give a little perspective on the impact of COVID for Eisenhower Health, our payer mix, we're a retirement community in the Coachella Valley, and our payer mix is 80% government pay. So we're 65% Medicare and about 15% Medicaid, or here in California, that's Medi-Cal. So the point of that is that our margins are very tight, being an 80% government pay institution. So to give a little perspective on, COVID and really what that impact has been here, COVID started in March and the community went on a shelter-in-place lockdown essentially March 15th. So it kind of hit full steam March 15th in terms of the drop off in volume. So for us inpatients from that point, we hit a low of almost 50% off of prior. Our emergency visits were almost 60% off of prior, and our outpatient ancillary visits went down about 50% to prior year. So since that time, we have seen a pretty significant recovery into June, and currently in our most recent month, we're running on the inpatient side, we're about 90% to prior year. Our emergency department is about 75% to prior, and surgeries about 85% to prior, and with our clinics running about 85% to prior. So we've seen pretty good recovery from the lows of the COVID impact. I think when I look at nationally, we're a little ahead of the curve and probably has something to do with our market demographics being retirement community in the high Medicare population, which is a higher utilization population usually from a health system standpoint. Now, looking at the financial forecasting as the strategies for us is difficult, obviously, in terms of you're looking at 50-60% shortfalls to prior in terms of your revenue out of the gate, not really knowing what's going to happen, when the community is going to reopen, when the shelter-in-place rules are going to be loosened. So our initial cast in terms of forecasting was a $100 million loss over the next 6 months. So that would have been through, for us, we're at June 30 year end. So that would be through our first quarter of FY21. So September 30 year end. So the next 6 months, we were looking at about $100 million in revenue loss. Well, since the recovery, we've recast that forecast, and we're looking at about a $70 million revenue shortfall over the next year, the next fiscal year for us. So we've been able right now to kind of fill that with $30 million in expense pullback, and we're looking to offset another $20 million from that in expense standpoint over the next year to shore up some of our capital needs. I will note, you know, the health system in the current year, so far we've received about $22 million in the CARES Act funding. So that's been very helpful in terms of shoring up our liquidity. When you talk about forecasting, you know, we were rolling into our budget period as we start a new fiscal year in July. And I'll say we had to change that strategy right away, that it just wasn't a period of time for us to budget in that unknown environment. So we had to put that on hold and really move into more of a quarterly forecasting role. So right now we've tried to put our stake in the ground for the next quarter. And as stability comes back, we'll be in a better position to, you know, lock that down into a budget roll forward. So from a strategy standpoint, aside from the blocking and tackling that are immediate fence recovery positions, I'll note, you know, one strategy that's helping us now and will help us in the short term go forward is we started a journey about 3 years ago. And fortunately, we're at the very end of that journey in terms of bolstering our information systems around finance. So we spent the last 3 years really fully developing an advanced cost accounting platform. We use Strata Decision Technologies for that platform, as well as some advanced planning and revenue analytics platforms. We're ready, we're poised, we've got better data, better information than we've ever had in terms of our knowledge of our cost and at a very detailed level. So that is one strategy that we see as a key for us over the next fiscal year in really pushing that information and data into the hands of our clinicians and our providers. We have a very engaged staff of medical directors and other clinical providers that we're making partners in our efficiency journey of healthcare. So aside from that, you know, some of our advanced cost accounting initiatives, we pulled the levers as most health systems have. Things like new position holds, us being a seasonal facility, we probably had some advantages that we do run a high level of traveler and registry positions. So we were able to end some of those contracts, which is helps you in immediately reducing your salary, wage, and benefit spend. So our volumes can vary 30 to 40% in season. We have a season from January to April is the primary high season. Our low season out here, obviously, given the weather in the middle of the desert, is June, really stretching into October, and things begin to start to pick up a little bit. So our seasonality somewhat helped us in that regard in being able to pull back on salary, wage, and benefit spend immediately. We're looking at, you know, service contract RFPs, so it's a great time for us to be pushing out new RFPs for any renewing service contracts. So we are expecting savings from that standpoint. Federal CARES Act has helped us, as well as other federal resources. We've been able to get some funds out of some IT technology funds that were made available to us. We're making all of our submissions to FEMA. I'll have to note that philanthropy for us has been a huge help. Our philanthropy in our market has been phenomenal in terms of helping the institution, just the outpouring in both dollars, goods. The philanthropy out here has just been amazing to help us get through this. One of our big strategies, obviously, is reopening for business. I'll talk a little bit more about that as we move forward, but that's really the key strategy for us to pull out of this. You know, and ultimately, I mean, what we're trying to do and what the entire leadership here within the health system is trying to do is save jobs. Our health system is critical to our local economy. We have well over $1 billion impact on our local economy. So it's critical that we do get things moving back in the right direction.
Resuming in-person care is a top priority for providers all over the country right now. What is your organization's plan for reopening? How do you plan to re-engage patients with in-person care while still managing the safety concerns brought on by COVID-19?
That has been a very challenging question, I might say. And obviously, as I noted in my prior comments, that really is the key strategy to returning to some normalcy and getting back on track from a financial standpoint. I'll say, as I noted earlier, in terms of where we are from an inpatient volume standpoint, all of our channels of really inpatient volume have somewhat returned to normal. The key area that has not returned to where we were from a recovery standpoint is really surgery. So our inpatient surgical volume is still off significantly. And so that has been one of the key issues for reopening and making sure that we can do it safely. It's presented a lot of challenges, but we are, I'd say we're probably 75% reopened now. Clearly, we shut down all elective surgery at the height of the COVID pandemic. We shut down all of our outpatient elective surgery. Well, we've been able to bring that back up. Our physicians have been very helpful in helping us do that in a very safe manner. The way we're doing that really is every surgery patient that's coming in, we're testing for COVID. So if they're going on the schedule, we send out the test and it has to be back, obviously, before they go into surgery. If it's an urgent, emergent surgery, we have the rapid test here to do rapid testing on patients to identify whether they're a COVID patient or not. That's been a challenge, though, because there's a shortage of testing, at least from the rapid testing. We've had pretty good success in our send-outs. Our primary send-out is to Quest Diagnostics for that rapid COVID test. And we've had pretty good success from a send-out standpoint with them. The barrier has been our rapid testing. We just can't get enough of an allotment. There's a allocation around the country in terms of everybody that has the equipment gets a limited allocation. So we've really had to ration that. And that has been really one of the biggest challenges to getting surgery and other services back open. But I think we have enough now. We have a plan that we can get everybody tested that's coming into the institution. The other thing that we've done to try to get patients back in is we've had direct outreach from our physician clinics to reach out in a campaign with patients to let them know it's safe to come back. We've done commercial print advertising to promote that it's safe to return to the health system. All staff are daily going through a health questionnaire as well as temperature checks and obviously isolation for any exposures from a staff standpoint. Everybody has to wear masks on the campus, whether you're in-house or inside the campus or you're outside. If you're on the campus grounds, you have to wear a mask. We're still limiting visitors into the health system, and anybody that does come in has to be masked, and they're getting their temperature checked on their way in. Physicians are taking the same precautions as visitors, so really the reassurance from the providers, I think, is what we're finding is very effective with our patient populations.
Great. Thanks, Ken. Telehealth has been crucial to many COVID-19 response efforts. What is your experience with telehealth, and has the adoption of more virtual care changed how patients engage with your organization?
Like a lot of other institutions, we were thrust into it by necessity. We really hadn't engaged in telehealth prior to the COVID crisis, and with the loosening from the federal restriction standpoint on telehealth guidelines in terms of billing and other security privacy guidelines with patients, we did open that up. We basically had two methods. One was very simplistic, and that was a FaceTime approach to telehealth. And we also used the Epic system through MyChart for telehealth outreach to patients. March and April, about 30% or about 20,000 of our visits in the clinic division were done through telehealth services. So, you know, we had about a 30% penetration of our volumes immediately moved to telehealth. I think the FaceTime approach really was the more preferred approach from the physician standpoint. Going through the Epic system was a little more cumbersome for patients. What we found, and I think from a telehealth standpoint, kind of talking about the go forward, couple things. It's a challenge financially. It's definitely here to stay, and it will be further developed with certain segments of the population would be my anticipation. But financially, there are some challenges with the reimbursement that does make that a challenge right now, at least for us, to fully develop that for the population. So we found that our senior population, they really wanted to come back into the office. So I think we'll see a rebound, and we're not going to stay at that 30% telehealth number. They really wanted to interact with their physician. They wanted that social aspect of that visit. I don't know that that would necessarily be the case in any market, to be honest. younger professional community, I assume telehealth probably worked great, and a technology that will be adapted to go forward. We're going to keep developing our platform to make it better. It's definitely here to stay. I think out of the gate that our providers are certainly comfortable that it's low complexity patients on telehealth, but I don't know that there's a comfort level for any complexity from a patient standpoint to be doing that through telehealth. I think long-term, I do see us developing patient self-scheduling in the health system over the next few years. And I think at that point in time, we'll have the technology on the front end to make patient health assessments as to what might be appropriate for a telehealth visit and provide some options for patient choice for telehealth versus an in-person visit. So we're certainly looking to advance our digital profile and always looking for new ways to connect with our patients. But right now, I see our telehealth probably pulling back from the past 2 months at a 30% volume rate for our telehealth now. I see us pulling back a little bit from that. So we'll see where it goes. It is a significant financial challenge for us go forward.
How has the pandemic changed how you think about operating healthcare organizations? What advice would you give other healthcare CFOs struggling to find financial stability during this uncertain time?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question. And I say that because there's so much in flux and changing with the COVID pandemic that I've not read or I haven't heard from anybody that has it completely figured out on the other side what's going to change. But clearly, there are some changes that were put in motion that are going to continue to drive after the pandemic and change healthcare. Key, the last topic we just talked about, telehealth, that I do think that's on the horizon and that will be further developed and become a much bigger part of healthcare than it has been. I mean, it has been getting developed over the past couple of years, but I think that's moving at a fast pace now. From my standpoint, COVID-19 brought to me just a stronger sense of the interdependence of communities and their health systems. We're really kind of joined at the hip to some degree. And for me, it brought a sense of the duty, you might say, to make sure that financially, from a stability standpoint, we're here. We're here for our community. And we also need their help. So we need the community's help to make sure we're here too. So I never really, prior to the pandemic, and saw some of the things going on around the country, and obviously here in our own market, never really thought of a health system as almost a public utility. But during the pandemic, there was some view, at least from my standpoint, that it's critical. And we've got to be resourced. We've got to be the resources here to be here for the community, bring the finance to play. And I don't have the answers yet, but it's certainly something that we're spending some energy on is we've got to find ways to generate more economic support for our health system. I think there's a lot of healthcare spend, you might say, in the market that we don't participate in, that we need to diversify our revenue mix to some degree. So, again, something like a pandemic doesn't cripple us the way financially that this started out crippling us. So we have made that migration to some standpoint. I'll say 5 years ago, the health system, we were probably 60% inpatient revenue and 40% outpatient. We flipped that, and we're probably 40% inpatient and 60% outpatient now. So we have been moving in that direction. Obviously, the pandemic was different in terms of shutting everything down, but usually a demand that can't be impacted like that that we just saw. So we're moving towards an outpatient organization, but we've got to find other ways to diversify our revenue streams. So it's something that I'm certainly giving a lot of thought to. I think, another thing that from my impression, what the pandemic did is really highlighted the need for significant growth in AI. I know AI is a universal buzzword nowadays that you hear everywhere and you can't really read an article or hear a conversation without a talk about AI. But when you look at all the guesswork around the country and what's going on with coronavirus, I know there's a lot of work nationally in terms of joining databases. Epic is at the forefront of that in terms of having ready access to a lot of patient data and a lot of patient encounters. So I think that it's really pushing that forward in a major way so we can see what's going on around the country and have real machine learning help in really crunching what we're seeing around the country, from treatment options to what's effective, what's not effective. There's been a lot of really trial and error and guesswork going on, and everybody's doing the best they can to handle the pandemic. So, but I think, you know, probably it's going to move that forward at a much faster pace. As far as some, you know, recommendations, so those are kind of my views in terms of the future for us. You know, I'm about revenue diversification, improving our technology. I'm trying to automate everything I can, honestly, and especially in the finance shop. It's all about automation, so I can use my finance team to be out there and be partners with my providers, my clinicians, to really make healthcare more efficient. I firmly believe we've got to prepare for the commoditization of healthcare. Every other industry has been commoditized at this point, and we're seeing it. I mean, we're going to see the further decrease in payments or revenue streams into healthcare, and we're going to have to learn how to become more efficient and delivering a more efficient care, better spend for our consuming public. So it's fundamental, and I think we're on track here to do that and make those strides. From a recommendation standpoint, in terms of anybody else through the pandemic right now, I think everybody's pulling the same levers, to be honest. My feel is we, you know, just needed out of the gate, you needed to stay calm and remain optimistic. Optimism is key. Folks are looking at us. The community's looking at us. Employees are looking at us. So we have to remain optimistic and engage partners everywhere that we can. One thing I'd say is for me, you know, one of the things right out of the gate was to fully staff up and get external help where I could to try to tap into any federal funding resources, make sure we're tapping into every CARES Act resource that's available to us. So that's critical out of the gate, especially when you get into your FEMA filings. I know that's a ways off in terms of any funding from FEMA, but there's just a lot of programs out there, and it takes a lot of resources to make sure you're tapping into those programs appropriately. So as a healthcare finance institution, too, we have to continue on the strategies of how do we engage providers and the clinical staff in our efficiency journey. What I've really done and what we've done here is to try to put the tools out to the staff in the institution, as well as the medical directors and everybody else, so they have the tools they need to help us become more efficient. I've always found that if you can give them the information, they're more than willing to help us become more efficient as a health system. So those are kind of my key thoughts and what really I'd say is consuming, you know, my thoughts as we roll forward.
Can you elaborate a bit on the efficiency journey Eisenhower Health has been on?
Absolutely. You know, historically, and I'll say it, it's been about 3 years. So we've been on a 3-year journey to really modernize our financial system. So we had old McKesson legacy systems. Cost accounting system was very high level, what you might call almost like a Medicare cost report based costing. And it just wasn't, you know, where we needed to go, because my feeling is that we've got to become more like industry in terms of understanding our business at a very detailed level. And so we can't have the information and then to get answers or to actually get data or get input, you know, I've got to send a team of finance folks to a back room for a month to come back and give a study. So we've been pretty successful to this point in terms of developing those systems. I'll say in advance, I talked about it early on, but in an advanced cost accounting platform that we work closely with Strata Technologies on, that really can, in a quick manner and even in an interactive basis in a meeting, can highlight utilization practices and allow you to get down to a very low level of detail to answer questions right away. For providers, you know, and a lot of times that's a challenge for physicians, you might say. They want the data, and I understand, I want the data too, and they want the data. And we now have the ability to give it to them in a real-time manner so we can see what's going on in the health system. We're also just on the cusp of actually being able to give them cost data for services they're performing in the institution when they make an order so they can see that. So it's really been able to highlight some practices for us. Just one example and a high-level example, what we had some success lately was, you know, institutionally there was not much, let's say, patient outcome difference in using one drug treatment that's an IV-infused drug treatment versus an oral treatment. But the cost savings between the two were significant, you know, $30 a treatment, but we could show the physicians, you know, what the utilization was and them understanding the data realized that, There's no significant impact from the patient standpoint in making that change. But for the health system wide, that was an $800,000 potential, you know, savings over a year. So our systems are good. When I talk about automation, we've taken all that data crunching out of the back room from the finance standpoint. We've got systems doing that for us now, so we can spend our time, you know, being more of a team member, more of an asset to the providers to help them drive efficiency in the organization instead of them being buried. So that's been a tremendous effort for us and work. One of the, you know, most challenging things we do in healthcare is really estimating our net revenue. So we've got some advanced net revenue reserve systems coming in place that really at month end took a team of accountants to do normally that we're hoping to really condense that process and free up their time. There's some other automated accounting functions that we're trying to use technology for now that can do that better, like, you know, working credit balances in the business office from an automated standpoint. So we can take more people, you know, out of the equation. Both to trim down costs, but more importantly on the finance and the accounting standpoint, to actually put more of my team out there working side by side with, you know, the folks in the health system. Because ultimately, that's what needs to happen to really kind of bend the cost curves. At least that's my opinion. Historically, we've always been kind of a finance goes in the back room, they crunch the numbers and come back and tell everybody what that means. But I've really pushed on a three-year journey to put the tools in the clinicians' arms. Pretty soon we'll be able to push out financial data to them every month so they can see where they're performing and what things they really need to work on. They don't want to look at a spreadsheet. They don't want to look at a P&L. Here's where we really need your help to focus on. So I feel like those things are going to drive a yield for us.
Thank you for joining us, Ken. You definitely gave us a lot to think about moving forward.
Thanks, Jackie. Very happy to do it and very glad to be with you.
Resuming in-person services will take time as the country still grapples with COVID-19. New financial and operational strategies also beg the question, will hospitals truly be able to get back to pre-coronavirus levels, or is the pandemic carving a new path for CFOs? Let us know what you think by sharing this episode on Twitter and tagging us at RevCycleIntel. Thanks for listening.
Change Healthcare offers end-to-end revenue cycle management solutions for health systems, hospitals, and their employed physicians wanting to simplify workflows, reduce denials, optimize revenue, and improve the patient experience.
This has been an Xtelligent Healthcare Media production.